Hey there, and welcome to Speakeasy with Kendra Fisher. Join me each week as my guests and I take a deep dive into all of the conversations we've been taught are better left unsaid. No more silence, no more hiding. This is a safe space where anything goes. On the show today, I'm speaking with former NHL enforcer Curtis Gabriel. We're talking about the transition to life after the NHL and living with a new diagnosis of bipolar disorder. Good day, Curtis Gabriel. Thank you so very much for joining me here today. I am so excited to have this conversation with you.
Thanks very much for having me, Kendra. Yeah, it was cool to meet you when I did, and nice to connect now down the road.
It's funny. I find myself, I do this thing with my podcast where it's kind of like a catch-up, you know, that call that most people would actually just pick up the phone and have that like, hey, how's it going? I, for some reason, love the value of just having that call on a podcast and seeing what comes from it. So I really appreciate you agreeing to do this with me. Before we get too far into this, also, I just want to say thank you. You're my first guest back, and I appreciate it. I've been kind of on my own hiatus for about a year now. So I know we're both in an interesting part of our journeys, and it's great to be back, and I'm happy to be doing it with you. First, I would love for you to just kind of tell us a bit about yourself. What's that the elevator pitch for anybody who doesn't have the joy of knowing you already?
Well, I'm from Newmarket, Ontario. I'm 31 years old. Grew up playing every sport. Finally got to AAA at 10 years old of hockey. And then I lost my dad to suicide. And that kind of sent it on a, like, lost my confidence with hockey. So went back to just play for fun, single A, double A, Newmarket. Kept playing every sport. Had no inclination of playing pro hockey. Like, wasn't even just like going to Saturn. Like, there's no chance. It wasn't even something I thought about. And getting to like major midget, I thought I would just age out and try to figure out what to do and go to school or something. And my mom just suggested I go to the Newmarket Hurricanes junior A Stroud. And from there, for whatever reason, things fell into place and I just took off and realized that I might be able to play at least junior A and get a scholarship. And then from there it became, oh, I could play in the OHL. And then, oh my gosh, I can get drafted. I can play in the NHL and pro. So went on that journey for 4 years of in the OHL with Owen Sound, 8 years of pro, and retired in 2022 with a repeated wrist injuries. And finished with 52 games in the NHL, 375 in the minors. And now I'm just trying to figure it out from there.
Yeah, I love the modesty there. It just kind of happened. I'm sure there was a little bit more to it in terms of what you had to put into it to make it happen. But I'll give you that. We were just having a quick chat here before we kind of got into this, and you were mentioning that you're at an interesting part of your journey and that people seem to be reaching out again right now. And I mean, I'm no stranger to your story. I follow you online. I see you on Instagram, and I've reached out to you just kind of to touch base. And I'm just curious, in your words, how would you kind of describe where you're at right now and what's happened since you retired from pro hockey just a couple of years ago?
Yeah, well, I can definitely say that athletes die twice. Definitely been going through a death of the athlete part of me. Suddenly kind of retired, didn't really realize it was coming, but my wrist just couldn't take it anymore. And I didn't want to play. I already was playing with like discomfort for years, but I just knew it was going to be like pain now. And I literally couldn't like do it. So, that was kind of sudden. And then, I worked for an ex-partner with her for a while. And, that ended a couple months ago now. And, realized that I got to kind of figure out what's next for me. I'm very much privileged to have lived the life I have with pro hockey. And I was very materialistic, even though maybe not on the surface level to outside people, but I guess my own experience, I wasn't spiritual. I was very much just get what you get out of the world. And that's about it. And see how much far you can push things and see how much kind of pleasure you can enjoy. And that was about it. So going through the suffering of retiring and now kind of like a delayed mourning almost, but just now having to integrate into kind of the regular world. And it's not been easy. I don't have something that I'm super passionate about. And that's why I didn't even mention the hard work before, because it was in hockey, because it was easy.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, you have one purpose, be a hockey player and try to be the best you can. And everything else comes second. Everybody in your life comes second. It's the number one thing. You're narcissistic. You just play hockey. And so now it's just a completely different world, and having to kind of come to grips with the new spirituality awakening and like the suffering in the world and how I can help relieve it, but how I can also like, how can I make a living doing that? Because I got to support myself and all these things. So just trying to figure it out.
Now, I mean, so many pieces of this, obviously I can understand intimately, maybe in some ways that others can't, in terms of, you know, having a career in a sport that you're passionate about, that your entire world revolves around, and then having to try to figure it out after. How old were you when you retired? How old are you now?
29 and a half. So it's been like, yeah, just about 2 years.
Okay. And so prior to this, going into your hockey career, what was your schooling like? Did you end up getting a scholarship? Yep. Did you?
Oh no.
Take university, college, high school?
Nope. Just finished high school. I went to move to Owen Sound to play junior in grade 12. Just finished high school, you know.
Little shout out for the Attack from McKincardine girl.
On Sound Attack. Yeah. That's where I live now too with my mom, because my mom moved up here. So that's where I'm at the moment. And, just finished high school. So and didn't really enjoy it. That's for sure. So been 13 years since school.
Okay. And here's the reason I'm asking, because I'm always curious about the journey through the sports system. And as athletes, I think we get trained really, really well on our physical health. We get trained to be stronger. We get trained to maximize performance from a physical place. And in my current journey and what I've been doing for the past 10 years, working in mental health and working in a space of sharing that journey with others, one of the things I've become fascinated about is how little we actually put into, you know, personal development, and as you're referring to, spirituality and passion and purpose and mental health, really, whether it be from a disordered place or whether it be from just the simple fact that people need to manage their mental health in a way that it can sustain adversity and challenges. And I'm curious, through your sports career, how much emphasis was put on that? Or were there certain things that really helped you along the way in terms of managing your mental health?
I think I tried to, but I had to keep up my physical attributes so much because I wasn't a gifted skater. Wasn't gifted with my hands, wasn't gifted with many things. I mean, I'm kind of like built like a giraffe, like a marathon runner playing pro hockey and fighting guys that are like knuckle draggers, you know, like just big bone, big dudes. So I always had to just prioritize my strength and conditioning. And then I would try to put an effort to the mental health, but I think I was fighting an uphill battle there, being undiagnosed with bipolar type 2. So didn't find that out until just over a year ago in February 2023. So I think that was unraveling, as it does in people's 20s typically, as I was entering pro hockey and being the tough guy. People thought I had to be crazy to do the job I did, which kind of do. But I had to be like hypomanic to be like able to do it and push myself to those limits. I'm not a violent person. I've never been a fight off the ice. So I'm like a big time lover.
I mean, that's kind of how I met you as well. I learned of you through your kind of philanthropic, like, journey off the ice during your pro career and standing for individuals who didn't necessarily feel as though they fit in or feel welcome or feel included, and, you know, your work in that community. And I think that's how I first learned of you, to be honest. So it seems like a contrast when you're deemed the enforcer in your role, but you're in a position where it's like you're having to play this other place outside of hockey. And what type of an effect do you think that had on you in terms of being able to actually be yourself in your role as a hockey player.
It definitely affected it. You know, hockey's in pro sports is volatile. It's a volatile business. That's why everybody in it is low-key, high-key narcissists. Like, you know, we have to be. You have to think highly of yourself. You have to have extreme levels of confidence. Yeah, it's a roller coaster. So to add on top of that, bipolar type 2, it just like, you know, took it from being a regular roller coaster to like the highest roller coaster in the world for me. And then when it went down, it went deep down underground. So
yeah,
you could just see it in the wave of my career. I would kind of build it up and I'd get to the NHL and then I'd get sent down or something and I'd crash. And then I'd build it up, get up to the NHL and down, up and down, up and down. So it was like a year, 2 year cycle every time. And, yeah, just consistency is the hardest thing. I think the hardest trait for any human to possess and to model and to live. And yeah, it just made it pretty hard to bring consistency to my game.
How much more of that was the pressure of kind of maintaining that, though? I mean, I would have to think, again, having some knowledge of depression and some knowledge, my diagnosis is not bipolar, but I am very familiar with bipolar and the symptoms of, but as somebody who lives with anxiety and clinical depression, there's certainly characteristics that are parallel. And I know for a fact how incredibly difficult it can be in some of those moments of feeling that crash or feeling that letdown to make anything matter, to be able to get off the couch, let alone put on your skates and go in front of a crowd and try to carry that. How much effort was it taking from you to actually be able to put on that show?
I think what helped was that hockey's so physically demanding and tiring that, as we know with bipolar, exercise, or anybody in general, exercise is so important. So I think that mitigated some of it. But I mean, when it was good, it was a lot better than average person good. It was like you see sparklies everywhere. Everything was so magical. Like everything was perfect. I'm in the NHL, living my dream. I could sleep like 4 or 5 hours and have more energy than someone sleeping 10. Like I was buzzing. And then the other way, you want to sleep and you got to push yourself to get up and push yourself to give everything you have. You're fragile mentally, your resiliency drops away. So yeah, there are times when I just was like, what am I doing out here on this ice?
Yeah.
And then times where I felt like Superman.
Yeah. Now, since your diagnosis, you said that was just over a year ago, symptomatically, how does that show up for you? Bipolar 2 obviously comes with a spectrum of symptoms and how it can affect us. How is that showing up mostly for you?
Yeah. I guess I'm in a crazy transitory period of my life. So it's like, regardless if I have bipolar type 2, people go through ups and downs. So I think most people are going through a not too great time at the moment, just unsure. But yeah, just when I'm on my medication now, I've been on for 20 days or something, definitely helps. But when I'm not, you know, it's just that existential dread can like come on very fast. You know, just kind of out of nowhere for no reason, and just makes it very uncomfortable, like a mental, it's not like physical pain, but it kind of is. It's a mental anguish pain that's just in your body.
Anguish, that's such a good mind. Word.
Yeah, it's just like,
yeah, you know? It's you're physically crawling out of yourself because of the mental pain or desiring to.
And it's frustrating because like with my spirituality, like I know that that's just my mind. Like,
yeah.
I know that's just my mind being terrified of what's to come, unknowns. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, it's a physical manifestation. I can't deny that. It's a physical thing, bipolar. So a lot of people, it's like a Herculean task to not take medication and manage yourself. You got to live like a military person, your routines and all these things. So taking the meds kind of just takes that little tinge off it. And it's tough when you have also people in your life that think meds are like poison, and you have people that also that think that don't know. And then there's also people who think that it's everything and you have to, like I say, a psychiatrist that's very medical. So yeah, that's how it manifests. Just can come and go very fast. I think I'm rapid cycling because it can just change so much.
Yeah.
And then there's times when like a couple things will go well for me, and all of a sudden it's like I got this like weird energy, and I have like this rush of, wow, everything's fine. I don't need to take my medication. You know, mm-hmm. everything's good. I've done that cycle like 5-6 times now. So, yeah. And
I think unfortunately too, that's so characteristic of bipolar disorder, is it's very much that journey of feeling so euphoric and so good and so energized and so motivated and so purposeful. And unfortunately, the trend tends to be, in the cycle, as you said, tends to be that the smallest thing then can shift that. And as soon as it shifts, it's a catastrophic swing to the other side. And so it sounds as though potentially medication is part of the transition for you, that struggle to either accept the need for, or, I mean, you're saying you were diagnosed a year ago, you've been on your medication now for 20 days. So there's a math equation there that I'm not great at, but it would suggest that you've been white knuckling a bit of this. So why is that? Is it just I can't stand this word, but is it just the stigma around medication? Is it your own personal belief? Is it, what's the hesitancy of using medication as one of your tools?
Well, I didn't give enough information there, I guess. Like when I got diagnosed, I started taking lamotrigine, which is a mood stabilizer. Yep. So I took that for like, I took it for 9 months. So I was on it for a while.
And a heavy mood stabilizer. It's not easy.
I didn't know it was a heavy one, but for whatever reason, I'm always been a person that just like medication seems to just work, and knock on wood, not give me any side effects whatsoever.
Beautiful. So.
That's why I'm very privileged that way.
Yeah.
Besides like having really crazy vivid dreams, that's about it. And then I kind of went up a higher dose, then I went off them and on them and off them for a couple months. And then I got prescribed Abilify, antipsychotic one. So then now I take both of those in conjunction. Again, no issues whatsoever or anything. I guess it's just, it really comes down to just, you know, what's the difference between clinical depression and bipolar? It's, you know, you kind of know that normal is normal for you, and then you go down to the deep dark. Whereas for me, it's, I don't really know what normal is, because I want to be hot. I want to be hypomanic. I want to be more than normal, because that was what I deem as good.
Yeah.
So it's finding what is normal, and then just living there instead of searching for the high feelings.
And ironically, I'm going to ask you this because I know my take on it, but what is your perception of living as normal?
Don't even know. I guess being able to just, I don't know, be in the world, but not of the world. Know that, you know, there's three things that are non-negotiable in life. Phil Stutz, the celebrity psychiatrist, says there's like uncertainty, pain, and constant work, so that no matter what happens, I'm going to have to, and you know, indulge those and be okay with those. And then I guess just find the beauty in the small things. That's kind of what I see it as. Like, you're a soul on a journey, and you're not going anywhere. Your soul is unending. You're going to come back and do this over and over again in different lifetimes and different incarnations. That's what I believe. And you know, so suicide's off the table, because there's no point of doing that, because I'm just going to come back in a different realm. That's what I believe. So that's great in a way. I've never have a problem with that. So it's just knowing that you just kind of got to sit back into the present moment as best you can and deal with those three non-negotiables. And I guess that's what I think of as normal. And I hopefully finding something I'm passionate about that could serve others.
Yeah. And I love that. I think that that's one of the things that is huge, is finding that passion, finding that purpose. And I think that makes it a lot more, I don't want to use tolerable, because I think that there's something so incredibly beautiful, even though it's incredibly difficult, to learn how to sit in that, to how to sit in that place of what we used to, as athletes, deem as not enough. You know, you speak of wanting to push it, wanting it to be this epic experience, that high all the time of success and what we deem as success. And I think that there's this really cool opportunity for this journey following sport and I wish something that we started to be forced to learn while we were in sport is that it isn't the pinnacle of what can make us feel at our best. And it's, I think, that journey of learning that, you know, hockey wasn't feeding our soul. It was our involvement in the actual act of doing the thing we loved, in the connectedness of being on a team, and the, you know, the ability to use that platform as you did to help others and find purpose in that. And yes, the rules are different now, but I think that that ability to learn that journey while we're on it would be so much better if somebody would sit with us, you know, after our trainings, after our weight training, after our VO2 max test, and get into something like mindfulness or meditation, or really learning to sit with discomfort outside of just my muscles need repair.
Yeah, it's hard though, because you already have so much demands on yourself. You're so physically tired, which leads, you know, you're mentally tired from like pushing yourself to the limit all the time. Like, you know, that's definitely something that's, it should be. And it's, you, that's, I agree with you. It's just hard to integrate those things. It's something we can't physically see, you know, mm-hmm. It's a big challenge to integrate those things. But yeah, in a perfect world, it would be, you know, you're a human being that's playing hockey. You're not a hockey player.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's something that would enable us to be better hockey players though.
For sure. For sure. But that's the part of my beliefs too, is that comes in, is that that's just like, for me anyway, I guess going forward, that's what it should be for me. It's just like things happen the way they happen for a reason, you know, because
absolutely.
I needed to be sucked into being a hockey player and losing my identity to be where I am at today.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, going forward, that would be really ideal to have guys have a resource on every team that they can go and say whatever they want to that person in confidentiality.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It doesn't even have to be like a mental health person, just like somebody go tell that like you're having troubles with your girlfriend off the ice, or your boyfriend or your partner. You know, you're just like, what the heck is going on with my life? Like, it's just someone to vent to that's not going to come back to you in any type of way. Everybody needs that kind of person, and not just your friends and family, which are important, like an outside perspective, I think. So,
ironically, that's kind of what I do is try to offer that piece. There's no part of me that's ever going to go out and get my PhD. I'm never going to be a doctor. I don't want to be a psychologist. I understand the value and I'm grateful that they're there. My belief is that they're there in more of a crisis response type capacity at this point. We call them in when we already are beyond that place of what could have been manageable, or where we could have potentially affected change along the journey before we got to that. But I think that there is exactly what you're saying. There's so much value in identifying that those things all have an impact on us, and it's far greater than any of us realize. Because quite frankly, if I'm fighting with my partner, if I'm dealing with a loss or a death, if I'm, you know, having a really rough day with my kids, what I'm carrying into my ability to perform, whether it be work, whether it be sport, whether it be, you know, if you're fortunate enough, if sport is your work, I think that we don't have a very good understanding of how that impacts us. And so I think that that's just a constant journey that, ironically, being diagnosed with mental illness forced me into in a different way, because all of a sudden it was, I had to focus on that. It had to be, my physical self was not going to survive my mental illness if I didn't put that focus on. So right now, I mean, you're fairly, I will say, new into your diagnosis, your journey. Is this something you think you'd been dealing with a lot longer? Is this something that, you know, if you're looking back and you kind of pull the shades back on where you were at in your pro career, is this something you could have identified or could have been identified sooner than it was? Or do you feel like your onset was a year ago?
I do want to go back to your point about the psychologist thing after this, but I'll leave that footnote. But this question, like it was pretty much identified by a previous ex who was in taking psychology courses and is now a psychotherapist, and her dad was a psychologist, and they sat me down. They're like, you definitely have something going on. It seems somewhat-ish to bipolar. And that was probably when I was 25, 26. And I didn't want to hear it.
Never.
I was like,
never
want
to hear it from your partner.
this is who I am. Like, this is what makes me me. I'm just a passionate, crazy, hardworking, do whatever it takes person.
Yeah. And also never what you want to hear from your partner. I think that I read this the other day somewhere, and it was kind of the whole, you know, you should always ask this question of a partner, and that's, do you want me to give you advice or do you want my support? And I think that unless somebody's in that space where they're open to that advice, that would be very difficult to hear from that source.
For sure. And I think it was less about where, for me anyway, it was less about where it came from, because I have my mom would tell me something that needs to be said. My mom would give me the hard truth if it needed to be. So I have a good relationship with that.
Fantastic.
For me, it wasn't that. It was just that I don't identify with that. Like, that's great and I appreciate it, but it's just like, no, like, why would I say there's something wrong with me when I'm killing it? And you know, this is what makes me me.
Yeah.
So even if it is the case, like, I can control it, I can harness it.
It's part of your superpower.
Yeah. Then it just fell away to the background, to the periphery, until years and years later when, you know, the next partner did the same thing and was able to actually come on with me to talk to a psychiatrist, because I couldn't diagnose myself. I couldn't be honest with how I am.
Yeah.
Even when I was thought I was being super down and giving all my, what quote unquote, what I go through symptom wise and stuff, it still never measured up. It was always like, you're kind of close to all the symptoms, checking off the list to be a considered diagnosed bipolar, but not really fully there, until she came on with the psychologist and was like, yeah, this, this, and this. And he was like, okay, time to go back to the psychiatrist, and you need to go tell her what you just said to me, because that's going to constitute this.
Yeah.
So you can't see yourself. We're not
exactly.
All enlightened masters here. We need a mirror, and the ultimate mirror is your romantic partner. And she just pulled that right out of me.
Yeah. Which, I mean, what a blessing. Cause there's a lot of people who don't have that mirror and don't have the ability to sit with the discomfort of what you may see when that's brought to your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're absolutely bang on right about the fact that we don't have the ability in our worst moments or in our darkest places or in our disordered behaviors or thinking to identify all of those things. I mean, I'm at a place in my life where it's kind of, I have to give full power to the people I trust to hold me accountable. Cause there's days I'm like, no, like, I'm not doing that bad, or I'm not, you know, I'm handling this. This is fine. And they're like, but this, 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 and this. And I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't see it that way. Mm-hmm. Sorry. And you wanted to go back to the psychology.
Yeah. I just found it interesting because I'm contemplating, and I guess I did too. I've enrolled in Athabasca University.
Amazing.
Well, not so amazing, I don't think.
No.
thank you though. But I don't start it till August 1st, if I do. And I got access to the courses, the two ones I just started off with. But yeah, I've been like looking through it and sitting down for multiple hours a day sometimes and just being like, I don't know if I can like do that. Like, it just doesn't add up to me to like kind of what you said. And I haven't heard, I've been having similar thoughts about like, they're there for like crisis. I've talked to a lot of psychologists and psychiatrists. They're really, at the end of the day, they just end up having a talk with you like this. Like, there's really no difference. Like, offer like tools, but you can find every tool on the internet.
Yeah.
They are there for that kind of crisis thing. And I don't know if writing papers for 6.5 years, you know, and doing research on things that I don't really care about and don't think are ever going to be beneficial to be, have letters next to my name that say those things. So,
So here I am talking you out of school. That wasn't my intention, but I will go down this path with you and maybe we'll find some clarity. Cause I think that that's exactly what these conversations are for. And I can share in my experience, first off, there's absolutely a place and a need for psychologists
for sure.
and psychiatrists in our world. And for those of you who don't understand, who may be listening to this, the very simple differentiator is psychiatrists prescribe medication. Psychologists are far more engaged in talk therapy and the tools that are interrelated with talk therapy, CBT, DBT, different types of talk therapy. I was very fortunate. When I was diagnosed, I quit Team Canada in 99 because of my illness, and I was undiagnosed at the time. And I was forced into a place of, I was getting help whether I wanted it or not, because I wasn't surviving. There was nothing functional about my journey at that point. I ended up not leaving my apartment for 5 years. So it's not as though there was a place for me to pretend that I could sell it as part of my superpower. There was no, this is me doing my best and these traits are making me great. It was the anxiety took over my life and the fear became the power and guided a lot for a long time. But what I've learned since I started sharing my journey, and that was back in 2010, is I've had a lot of exposure to all of the different, you know, modalities, whether it be psychiatry, psychology, social work. And I think that what I have found that I can add value to is my personal experience. And when you do any form of research on what makes the most difference for people on a day-to-day basis, it's that lived experience, that connection of a journey that you can relate to and have conversations about and have a safe space to just be honest and vulnerable while you work through it. And for me, I don't necessarily think that psychologists get to do enough of that, because I think psychologists are limited to responding to people when they're in crisis, because financially, it's not as though everybody can just go to a psychologist multiple times a week and they kind of save those appointments for my world is falling apart. And so absolutely, there's that like percentage of need for clinical intervention. But I agree that I think these conversations, I go out and I speak, I share my story, and that's the best therapy I get. And I always forget that because I live with anxiety and public speaking is terrifying. But every time I do it, I get out there and I'm just like, wow, like this connection, this ability to sit in a safe space in a room where nobody has the right to be judgmental or tell me that I'm not okay being whatever version of myself I can show up as today, that just grants me so much more in terms of my ability to sit with it, my ability to deal with, you know, the need to be resilient, the need to manage challenges, the need to accept that these things are going to keep happening. And so for me, when I see that as it relates to sport or to my journey, I feel like I can help more people just by having these conversations.
Yeah, I think you're really speaking to me. I think we need to have a conversation
offline
to talk about this for sure.
Because, we will indeed.
Because yeah, it's just where I see it. And I'm not like out here to like you said, it's not, people can't afford doing that if they don't have insurance or benefits. It can cost, you know, a lot of money to talk to a psychiatrist or psychologist. And like you said, they're there for a reason. And when you really need it, you go pay those people. Mm-hmm. But like you said, like, that's when I feel my best too, is just having conversations with somebody and they tell their story, I tell my story, and we, you know, bond over that. And human beings work through stories. So yeah, I'm not out here to like make a boatload of money doing it. I just want to support myself. Like love to stay with my mom. I have no other responsibilities. I just want to help other people find something I'm passionate about to, like you're saying, share your story. It helps you. It helps the other person, that kind of thing. That's what I'm looking to kind of do in some way. I'm not looking to break the bank. I just want to help and get by.
Yeah. And I've always said, and I stand by it. I mean, I'm fortunate because you book a corporate event and that pays for you to be able to do 20 events for free, because those are the events where people are looking for connection and looking for guidance, but don't necessarily have the means to do it. But I think ultimately too, it's really creating that acceptance for people to understand how valuable it is to just be open, to just have conversation. I don't have the answers. I mean, I can sit here in front of you and I can tell you that I don't know how to fix you. I don't know how to anticipate what your next challenge is going to be. But I think the power in connection and the power in community is so great that it gives us an opportunity to grow and get stronger and discover information along the way that we can then either choose to be complacent and put aside and give it no merit or no value, or we can sit with it and we can learn from it. I mean, I sit here and I listen to you and you introduce the, you know, the three your three rules right off the bat there. And I'm like, you know, it's so true. That's so perfect. And now I'm going to go look him up when we're done. And just like that, there's this piece of information that now changes the trajectory of my day, because it gives me an opportunity to then view my own life experiences differently, just because I've taken the opportunity to consciously and purposefully have a conversation about something that I know can arise as a challenge for me. And I say this time and again, and people are going to get sick of hearing it, but I always hear it resonates, so I continue to say it. We don't teach people to swim when they're drowning. We don't wait until somebody is drowning to show them how to swim. Yet we do this thing as humans where we expect that we are going to have the tools and the ability to withstand the greatest tragedies in our lives and the greatest hardships, with absolutely no idea how to sustain ourselves through those things. And there are just so many tools now. There's so many resources. And yes, there are people who live with mental illness that require the additional assistance of medication to help to balance chemically what we're unable to balance. Because like you said, you're right. To live medication-free with mental illness, if you don't have 24/7 to dedicate to managing every single factor that is going to play a role, it's unrealistic. But
yeah,
that doesn't mean that we can't take the time to learn. And for me, you know, it's mindfulness, it's yoga, it's physical activity, it's running, it's cardio, which I hate, but I know the impact it has on my mental health. You know, it's having reasonable tools. It's having a paint by number set up in front of my TV because I'm 3 weeks post-op and can't go for a run. So what's the next best thing I can do to pass time that is useful to my mind, but not creating a sense of dread and doom? And there's just so many little pieces of information that we gain, and we gain those most by having these conversations.
There's almost like everything you need to know is out there now. There's the internet. Like every single person, like there's some person sent me the other day, this 64-year-old psychologist he's been a psychologist for 64 years. He's that old. And wow. He started an Instagram and he said, "Help me be an influencer. I'm going to share it. Everything I've learned in 64 years of practice that actually helps people."
Yeah.
And so you just sit down and watch those for a couple of days. You write down what resonates with you. Boom.
Yeah.
Like it's almost just sifting through all the amount of tools and applying to you what works, and then to trial and error of it. And like you said, there's this other guy, he like does funny videos where he takes like a stick and he attaches a clip mic to the end of the stick, and he's out in the woods. I think he's Irish. And he just says, like, "Do you realize that if you don't have any mental issues in the world that we live in, where we're not supposed to be living this way, we're not supposed to be cooped up and we're supposed to be outside all the time, living outside, living as hunter gatherers, all that stuff. If you don't have mental illness, you're weird." And then he just walks off the camera.
That is the illness.
that's true. It's just like we've progressed and things are more convenient. We don't worry about, I mean, knock on wood, where we live in the world, for the most part, we're privileged. You know, we don't worry about someone coming to like break our door down and kill us, or a saber-toothed tiger eating you. You know, you don't have to worry about those things. We have all these conveniences, but at the same time, you don't live as presently. You have multitude of distractions. There's things at your fingertips on the internet that are so unhealthy. You know, there's just, you live in a world that you have to really navigate it to be functioning in it.
Well, and I think too, like, you look at the conveniences we have. I mean, I know word of a lie was like borderline ready to throw a tantrum yesterday when my Instacart order showed up and the replacements that they had chosen weren't up to my standard. And I had to have a serious moment of reflection after this. And it was kind of like, yes, we have conveniences, but those conveniences have just created greater challenges for us to understand how to actually be resilient. I think we've taken so much of that natural necessity to develop those skills out of our day-to-day life because it's just gotten too easy. It's gotten to a place where, and that sounds ironic, because don't get me wrong, life isn't easy. But when we try to create convenience for every hardship and challenge we go through to make it less, we are completely negating human development. And now we're in this world where it's like we have so much that has developed beyond us. and we're just playing catch up and we're doing a really bad job at it.
Yeah, and we're like supposedly the lucky ones, right? We don't live in Gaza. We don't live in some third world country. We don't live in some place where survival every day is a challenge. So,
I didn't mean to drop there.
No, it's okay. Just how to like be grateful for that, you know, and make the most of this crazy world we live in. And like that, I always come back to like be in the world, but not of the world. Like Tibetan monks are like, and actually Paramahansa Yogananda, a great yogi, used to have all his disciples read the news every day because it was so awful. And yeah. The point was to just, that's the way the world is and move on with your day. Like he made them do it to see like the suffering in the world, but then also to not be attached to it. So it's just like be in the world, but not of the world. Like only one thing I can do change myself.
Yeah.
There's nothing else any of us can do.
The greatest
way to help and like hold a sign up for everyone else is just to embody what you believe. And if everybody did that, there wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I couldn't agree more. And I love that. I love those moments where it's like that light bulb goes on for me because I'll be having these conversations with people with zero intention of being entirely selfish and seeing what I get out of it. But let's be honest, I'm smart enough to do that. I'm smart enough to recognize that there's nobody in this world that doesn't have the ability to teach me something. And I value it so greatly because I think that we have that opportunity. And if we stay open to learning and we stay open to the belief that we don't know best and we don't know it all, then we have an opportunity every single day to get something and embrace something that can actually change our lives. And currently, I mean, I say this and I say this, I don't mean for this to sound flippant. This is factual. I lost my father a month ago and he's my best friend. And I also just had surgery 3 weeks ago to treat endometriosis. So it's been a hell of a month. And it's, you know, I get to this place where it would be really easy to lay down. It'd be really easy to just accept all of the emotion that comes with that and the loss and the tragedy and the grief. And I think that this journey has enabled me to still be sitting here. It's enabled me to be in a place where I can appreciate the pain and the depth of what I'm going through, but allow it to exist alongside the fact that it doesn't have to be in place of me having these connections. And in fact, by continuing on and creating situations for these connections to be possible and exist in the context of what I'm going through, it's like setting up your own support system at all times. And it's just got such value. It's got, you know, to hear those words, I'm sitting here going, yeah, like that's exactly what I needed to hear today. Because I've really been struggling with, I lost my best friend. I lost my father. He was my hero. He'll always be my hero. And I had to go through surgery. And that is like by far my greatest fear in life was having to have surgery, being put under. I'm emetophobic. I hate the thought of throwing up. Don't put meds in my body because you might make me puke and it's just going to be the end of my world is what it is. I can be honest about it. And not being able to do anything now, like being so limited by the fact that I had surgery, can't lift. Like I'm just stuck sitting here in the grief that is having just lost my father with no access to all of those distractions that we as athletes love. Like I just want to run. I want to like Forrest Gump my ass from coast to coast right now and not have to sit with this for a second. But, you know, in this conversation, I'm finding that piece and another piece of information that can allow me to sit in it, which is, yes, there's hard, but we can do hard. We can survive hard.
That's really hard what you're going through. So I feel you on that. That's a lot. I can't imagine. Like I lost my dad young and I don't have any memories. So to hear you going through that now, who's your best friend? It's like me losing my mom. And
yeah.
So I don't even know. So yeah, I don't have words to what you're going through, but,
I'm still smiling. He wouldn't tolerate anymore.
You're starting your podcast back up. So you're clearly talking to people and wanting to talk to people and move forward. So I guess the key part is just having these conversations. And then when the camera's off and the mic's done and we're we're done here, it's then how do we got to go integrate it? That's the hardest challenge. You know, we could talk about it till we're blue in the face, but what are we going to do to continue moving forward? And it just seems to be like those three rules. It just seems to be what everybody says. You just have to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Like, it's just like, that's what's happening today. It's like reading those guys reading the news when they're all about peace and love and meditation. It's like reading the news and like, oh, somebody was assassinated. Wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, there was a genocide. Well, you know what? That's just the world and I can't control it. And why am I going to torture myself about it? What can I do here where I'm seated? What can I grow happiness at my own feet? And that's the best way to help others around me.
Yeah. I have somebody in my life who says that all the time. I'll get to a place where it's like, I am just, you know, you can feel that spiral creeping in. You can feel that moment of like, I'm not managing this well right now. And it's very much just look at your feet, physically look at your feet, be where your feet are. And it happened to me again the other day, and it was comical. I went home on the weekend, actually, and it was the first time I'd been back since my father's funeral because I had surgery 3 days after his funeral, and I haven't been allowed to drive. So finally, I'm like, I'm going home. Like, I need to go home. My mom needs me. Their 54th wedding anniversary was the week after he passed. Like, I need to go home. And I got halfway home and realized I hadn't been there yet, and just it started to hit. Which it does. And that's okay. There are going to be moments where I am ugly crying. And that just is, that's fair. The love is that strong. That's the grief I'm left with. And I got back there and one of my best friends lives across the street from my mother's house. And I walked over and I lost it. Had no words, didn't want to talk, just like, I need to cry and I need to not be alone. And went over, hugged her. Sitting there for a second, she turns around and runs into the kitchen with such a great purpose, runs into the kitchen and comes back with a bag of peanuts. And I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, you need to eat these. You need to put these in your mouth right now and you need to taste them. You need to be aware of how they taste. And I was like, you are being extraordinarily strange right now. Like, what is so great about these nuts? And I'm over here brokenhearted about my dad. What just happened? And she's like, I need you to remind you that you're here right now. I need you to remember right now that you are right here eating these nuts and what they taste like. And I just smiled because it's so true. It can be such a simple thing to use our senses to bring us back to the present. But in the present, I can recognize, yes, I am sad. This is sad. But I'm also okay. And the day is going to continue on. And no matter what, that is true. That's what I can control right now. So I'm going to eat this nut. I'm going to remind myself that apparently peanuts are magical.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I connect with your five senses. But no, like what you're going through, there's a guy that I really liked, Michael A. Singer. He wrote the books The Untethered Soul, Living Untethered, and The Surrender Experiment. And I got to go meet him. And he said he shared a story about someone who was really struggling with grief and a loss of a close loved one. And he tried to reframe it for them. He's like, you know, that feeling that you feel, and you touched on it, is that that's how much you cared about them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, can you frame it in your mind? Like, okay, yeah, it's awful. They're gone. You're going to feel. But the reason you're feeling so deeply is because you cared about them and you got that time with them.
Oh, yeah.
Can you focus on that side of it? And it's almost like, can I do the same thing with my hockey? Why, like, instead of sitting here and saying, you know, God, living like a professional athlete is just like so great. And now it's prepared me to like not feel good doing, I just don't have the adrenaline and all these things. And now I'm feeling kind of, what am I supposed to do now? But can I appreciate for it for what it was and what it taught me? And can I say, okay, awesome. I'm proud of that. I love that. Now how can I start today to move forward? So
there's so many parallels
between everything. Yeah.
I challenge you with that because the answer is you can, because here I am. I know women, we didn't get the chance to play in the NHL, but you know, the day I made the Team Canada roster is the day I quit Team Canada. And at that time, that was the pinnacle. That was the dream. That was the goal. I wanted to play in the Olympics and I would have given my life for that. And I gave my life for that up to that point. And it took a long time for me afterwards to realize that chasing the next thing to replace hockey isn't the answer. It's not about finding the next thing and putting that behind me. It's not about matching what hockey made me feel. It's about recognizing that I was blessed with that experience and that I was gifted to be able to play a game I love that gave me access to so many incredible experiences and connections. And I now get to carry that with me. And you're exactly right. It's no differently than what I'm going through with my father. My father was diagnosed during COVID with dementia and Parkinson's. And it's the most brutal illness to watch somebody that you truly love disappear bit by bit and struggle. And, you know, there were a lot of moments of just, there's no way I will survive my father dying. There's no way. If you had asked me 2 months ago if I was going to survive my father passing, and it was, yes, he was ill, it was unexpected, but we knew eventually it was going to lead to that. And if you had asked me 2 months ago if I was going to survive this, not a chance, not a chance. You know, what you just said about your mom, like, the thought of having to face that and be without that relationship would have drowned me, and did for the past couple of years several times, in that anticipation of. And at one point, I was challenged with looking at what I still had, what I got to experience. Instead of focusing on what it was taking from him, instead choosing to just be present with him, just meet him where he's at and be present and be grateful that I still get that. And I still had so much of my father right till the very end. And I reminded myself, I put a tattoo in my hand, and my dad used to have the most beautiful penmanship, like calligraphy. He used to draw maps. Like, that's how beautiful his hand work was. And so I remember thinking, I really wanted his penmanship that said, I love you, on my hand. And as his illness progressed, he lost that dexterity. He wasn't able to write the same. So writing I love you became illegible, mostly. And the one day, I just, in my mind, I was like, I need to remember him. I need to remember what it was, what I'm losing. And I realized that that's exactly the opposite of what I needed to do. I needed to not look at it as though I was losing him. I needed to recognize he was still sitting right next to me. And I was losing those moments in the present by looking back at what I'd lost and by fearing what was going to happen. And so I asked him that day to write I love you in his handwriting. And it's not perfect, but it's absolutely perfect, because it reminds me now every single day that I got so many more moments with my father that I get to cherish forever, because I dropped the pretense of what was going to happen and I let go of what I lost and I learned to live with what I had. And I am blessed. I was blessed with an incredible father, and I am honored that I'm the person who gets to continue his legacy by sharing stories of him with people who don't know him, because I don't know a person who didn't love my father. And so, yeah, it's hard, it's brutal, but it's so damn beautiful too. Like, it's so just, there's no regrets. I have no regrets because of the ability to learn how to stay present with him. And I think we can carry that into everything.
Yep, that's the yin and the yang. They recently, like, really recently got a picture of two, like, photons coming together, and it literally made what looks like a yin-yang.
I love,
like,
it.
What the people back in the day drew. How did they know that? That's just, there's the most, in the most darkest places, there's also the, like, it's just an absence of light, and then the light's right there. It's, I don't know, it's, darkest things are most beautiful things. That a lot of times, like, a lot of beautiful things come from them. It makes us so present. It makes us appreciate it. It brings us back to who we are and what matters. So it's such a crazy world of paradoxes where, like, everything matters, yet it doesn't matter. And it's walking that line between the two.
And it's the simplicity of it. It's the, you peel away all of the, what am I trying to discover? What am I reaching for? What do I truly, you know, what's the pinnacle to me? Why am I making this so complex? We paralyze ourselves by getting stuck in the moments of making it perfect. what if we just start? What if we just take the next step and then deal with what comes when we hit a wall or when we fall? And typically, if we allow that to be the reality, we will continuously be reminded that there's always light in the darkness.
Nailed it. Yeah. That's exactly it. Like, and it's, and like I said earlier, we're not going anywhere, in my opinion. We're just gonna live a different life after this. And the whole purpose is it's just a never ending string we're all entangled in. And our job is just to come back to love as many times as we, every time we face something, and just embody love. Like, that's what it's all about. That's what all I want to do is just embody love and inspire people around me to embody that as well. So that's all about.
I love that. We're ending it right there. I love that. And it is all about bringing it back to love. And I think that's perfect. And as hard as it is sometimes to keep that in mind, you know, mm-hmm. I think it's at the heart of everything, not to be cliche. And if we can embrace that's what matters. If we can truly embrace love and kindness and let them guide us, everything that feels impossible becomes possible. So I feel like we could probably do this for a few more hours, and we will absolutely connect offline. But I think you are on an incredible journey. And I know that it feels like a really tough transition. And as somebody who has this minute experience that runs parallel to yours, I'm excited for you. I don't know how else to say that. I'm excited for you because I feel like you've got so many moments ahead of those aha moments of recognizing that there's so much passion in you, and you're going to apply it to places that matter in ways that you never could have imagined, because you've limited your thinking at this point to thinking hockey is the greatest part of your story. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited for you to learn all of the other things that are going to be spectacular.
Well, thank you very much. And it's like, I know that's not the most important part of my life. It's just my subconscious is stuck in it. There's a reason every single night it's a hockey dream. Every single night. It's like, I, in my waking state, I'm not missing it truly, but I'm missing the feeling of just having life being that special thing. But going back to what you said, if I'm on a special journey and you're on this minute parallel journey, but that's what's funny is we're all on the same journey. Like,
absolutely,
we're all on the hero's journey. Like, nobody's journey is more important or like less important, or like there's more suffering, or we can stack up this life. Oh, this is a privileged life. This is a shit, a less privileged life. It's like, but there's a reason. Like, that is just, the privileged life is just as hard. There's a reason billionaires kill themselves. There's a reason. Yeah. There's a reason kids in the street with nothing are blissfully happy. You know, like, there's a contrast there, and it's not linear, and it's not, life isn't linear.
Yeah.
And it's knowing that that's really what we're doing. What you do and what I'd want to do is just help everyone remember that, like, your story is just as equal as mine.
Yeah.
My story is just as equal as yours, because we're the same soul, just experiencing this crazy world and infinite universe in a different way from a unique perspective. Not one single person has the same perspective as you.
And I think that's where I was leaning towards with the minute parallel, is just that I don't ever want to take away from or assume to understand your experience. And I think that's key, right? I could sit here and tell you we have the same story. I could sit here and tell you that I get it all, but I get it from this small place of understanding the journey of an athlete and the transition out of athletics and the first death we all live as elite athletes. But exactly, your experience and my experience, albeit factually there is an alignment that is obvious and connection is inevitable, there's also the reality that is the way we each experience those things can be extremely opposite. And so I think it's so important for us to always recognize that, because drawing those parallels is dangerous. I think that there's a failure and a potentially a common desire to do the whole, oh yeah, but me. And I'm working really hard. Some of my internal growth is that listening piece of really understanding that I need to always consider somebody else's perspective, even if it's of the exact same story.
Well, I just want to return that back to you, and that, you know, it shows with what you're going through, some of the darkest times and toughest experiences you've been through, that you're starting up your podcast again. You're wanting to have these conversations and get out because you're putting into practice what you know, mm-hmm. and you know that helps, and you want to embody that because you want it, and then be able to say, hey, I'm doing the work, when you talk to people and when you help others.
Yeah.
So I commend you for
appreciate
that. That's what it's all about. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining me here today, for joining me back in this wonderful journey. And my focus was elsewhere for the past over a year now. And I have no regrets for that. It's not something I apologize for. Things came up in my life that required my attention, and I stepped away from this podcast, but I am grateful to be back. And I think this is such a worthwhile journey, and I value so much connecting with people like you. So thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you so much, Kendra.
Thanks for hanging out with us on another episode of Speakeasy, where we believe conversations are meant to be had out loud. Share this episode to help others find our show, and don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. You can also join me at KFisher30 on Instagram as I travel across Canada and the US tackling the current mental health with colleges and universities.